Good evening. This is the regular meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature for October 16th. There are emergency exits to the back of the room to my right, to the front of the room to my left. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. If you have electronic devices or cell phones, please silence them. That includes legislators. First order of business tonight is a public hearing. That public hearing is on proposed local law D of 2016, a local law enacting the late application procedure for the low-income senior citizen real property exemption. Is there anyone here tonight who would like to speak about the proposed local law? Not seeing anyone. We'll close the public hearing, and I'll ask folks if they would please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we have the roll call of members, please.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer? Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present?
We have quorum. We're all here tonight. That's great. Presentations of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We have a proclamation tonight. I'm going to turn to Leslyn McBean Claiborne, who chairs our Workforce Development and Inclusion Committee, and that she has a proclamation to read regarding Indigenous Peoples Day. Leslyn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I use that microphone?
Absolutely.
Proclamation from the Tompkins County Legislature.
It's not on.
Y'all trying to silence me? Thank you, Jim. Whereas the members of the Tompkins County Legislature recognize that the indigenous peoples of the lands that would later become known as the Americas have occupied these lands since time immemorial. And whereas the county recognizes the fact that we currently stand on land that was the homes and villages of the Cayuga Nation and the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, and whereas the county values the many contributions made to our community through Indigenous peoples' knowledge, labor, technology, science, philosophy, arts, and the deep cultural contribution that has helped shape the character of Tompkins County. And whereas the county has committed through its diversity policy and other non-discrimination policies to oppose the systemic racism towards all marginalized peoples, including the indigenous peoples in our region. And whereas the county has for years committed to protect, respect, and fulfill the full range of inherent human rights for all as set forth in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and numerous other international human rights treaties. And whereas Indigenous Peoples Day was first proposed in 1977 by a delegation of Native Nations to the United Nations-sponsored International Conference on Discrimination Against Indigenous Peoples in the Americas. And whereas the county proposes to honor our nations, and more specifically, Tompkins County's indigenous roots, history, and contributions, now, therefore, the Tompkins County Legislature, on behalf of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, 1, declares the second Monday in October 2016 as Indigenous Peoples Day in Tompkins County, 2, encourages other public institutions, businesses, and organizations to recognize the day as Indigenous Peoples Day, and 3, affirms the county's commitment to promote the well-being and growth of Tompkins County's American Indian and Indigenous community. Be it further resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature, in recognizing the second Monday of October as Indigenous Peoples Day, calls upon the citizens of Tompkins County to officially celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day in a manner that promotes respect, understanding, and friendship, combats prejudice, and eliminates discrimination stemming from colonization. In witness whereof, the Tompkins County Legislature has caused the Great Seal of the County of Tompkins to be affixed this fourth day of October in the year 2016. Presented. Presented by the Tompkins County Legislature. I'll take liberty, I'm at the mic. Today, October 4th, it's a wonderful day. It is also my wedding anniversary. And I couldn't think of a better present than to have this esteemed body of colleagues support this proclamation and support what would be a movement here in Tompkins County to step forward, like other municipalities have done throughout the United States, to pass a resolution some point in the near future with the aid and support of members of the Indigenous peoples who live here in Tompkins County and beyond, that we will make this a recurring thing, that the second Monday in October will also be recognized as Indigenous Peoples Day here in Tompkins County. So thank you for this present, and I'd like to call the representatives, the members of our Indigenous peoples and Native American communities who are here in our audience to please come up and accept this proclamation from your legislature. Presented to you from the Tompkins County Legislature.
We thank you very much. That's something. And the legislature. Would you like to go with your little brother?
This is my little brother. I'm the older sister here.
Please introduce yourselves.
I'm Audrey Cooper. I am from Sand Hill, Lenape Cherokee people.
I'm Joe Soto. I'm from the Taino Nation, from the Caribbean.
Gotta speak in the mic, Joe.
I point it this way. I'm Joe Soto. I'm from the Taino Nation of the Caribbean. I've been living here in Tompkins County for about 20 years and have been an active member of the Indigenous community since. Thanks.
We'd like to say thank you on behalf of a newly formed group of Indigenous peoples who reside here in City of Ithaca and the County of Tompkins. We represent Lenape, Cherokee, Taino, Cheyenne, and Quechua, and many more nations. You will be hearing more from us as the months proceed. We would like to thank you for this, and we thank Leslie McBean Claiborne and the city's workforce, the county's Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. This is an important step. Our people have been fighting for this for years. We can no longer have a holiday that committed genocide against all of our peoples. So thank you, and we look forward to working with you in this next year.
Thank you, Leslie. Nicely read. There will be an executive session tonight. It'll cover two things. One will be potential real estate purchase, and the other thing will be litigation. Let's move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is an opportunity that folks in the audience have to speak to us for up to 3 minutes. If you'd like to speak, we need one of these blue cards in the back of the room filled out and sent forward. It's your agreement to our rules. Our rules are that you agree to a three-minute time limit. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. There's a time clock, and we'll show the 3 minutes. At the end of the time, there'll be an audible signal. If you're still speaking at that time, please conclude. Our first person, the first blue card I have is Deborah Dawson, then Teresa Ault.
No? Oh. Whoa. Okay. My name's Deborah Dawson. Most of you have met me, at least, come to a lot of these meetings, but I'm here tonight as a member of the Planning Board in the Village of Lansing, and I'm here to ask for your help as legislators. You may or may not be aware that we had a rezoning proposal in our village to rezone a 19-acre piece of property on Beaumax Drive from business and technology to high-density residential. The planning board got behind this pretty enthusiastically for a number of reasons. The property in question has been undeveloped for decades. It's currently valued at $1.2 million, which is not the optimal tax value for that property. Importantly, this rezoning proposal would be consistent with our comprehensive plan. It would address a housing shortage in the county. It would establish 140 new residences within walking distance of the commercial high traffic district of the village, which is the Trip Hammer Corridor, which is not incidentally one of the main retail and sales tax sources for the county outside of the city. It's also close to bus routes on Warren Road. And, of course, there's also that increase in the tax base. The Board of Trustees kind of delayed acting on this, which gave a nearby developer time to rouse up a lot of NIMBY opposition. We had an unofficial public hearing at which many people complained that they didn't want an unmanaged, transient, noisy nuisance population living anywhere near their houses. They were concerned that their property values would plummet, and that was the word that was used. We are having a public hearing on October 17th. In the meantime, I would really appreciate you, the legislators, addressing this issue, communicating with our Board of Trustees and our Planning Board. I have everyone's email here, if you would like it, and telling them that, yes, this is a good thing for the county. I know there are concerns because it would take land that could be developed for commercial purposes, but I want to point out that, first of all, TCAD indicated that they were just fine with this because businesses needed places to house their employees. And finally, I would like to point out that we have currently 143 acres of undeveloped BTD property in the village of Lansing. We would still have 123.6 acres if this project was approved, which would reduce the available land by about 13.5%. And my time's up. Thank you.
Thank you. Teresa Ault. Then you, Elmer Ewing.
My name is Teresa Ault. I live at 206 Eddy Street in College Town, City of Ithaca. Cargill has requested a $640,000 sales tax abatement to build a second shaft in their salt mine. The second shaft is a matter of safety. It must be built, and there are no environmental objections that anybody is raising. According to Cargill's financial summary, their 2015 net earnings were over $1.5 billion, more according to their adjusted earnings, more this year, more like over $2.3 billion. So this is not some little startup that needs to scrape together a loan here and an abatement there to make a go of it. And that is what IDA tax abatements are for, to get those new little businesses started. But Cargill is a huge company. It can afford to pay for its needed safety measures. Instead of diverting money to profits, they can use the money for that second shaft starting now.
Thank you. Elmer Ewing. Then Audrey Cooper.
Thank you for the chance to be here and speak. I've heard that there is a proposal to create a new county position of energy navigator. My ears pricked up when I heard that. Now, that's a great idea, I thought. With the urgent need we have to promote clean, homegrown energy and to reduce our reliance on climate-changing fossil fuels, we could certainly use a person to help us navigate all the ins and outs of making the decisions that must be made as we travel the new energy highway. One person? Probably not enough for such a big assignment. We need two or three. Then I heard it would be a half-time person for only 1 year. Bummer. Well, to a person who is starving, half a loaf is better than none, or so the saying goes. But how much better a full loaf would be? This would be an important job. It should be filled by a talented individual, a person of the right training and background, a person impatient with the way things are, but having the patience to pursue all possible avenues and the wisdom to select the best ones. A person is skilled in human relations so as to be able to sell the good ideas. One who knows when to compromise and when not to settle for an inadequate solution. I almost said a person with the right temperament, but that word got ruined in the last presidential debate. No, we need to have a good pool of applicants from which to pick the best possible candidate for this strategically important job. I am concerned that a half-time, one-year position will not attract a very large pool. I urge you to consider making it a full-time job with the possibility of reappointment for at least 2 more years. We need a full loaf for what needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian Eden. Then Irene Weiser.
Well, many, many people ask me for money, and I give it freely, but when I ask them for something, they do it. It's as simple as that, folks. So this is what I want to talk about, is the intersection between all of these ideas and tax abatements and tax exemptions. There is an intersection, and we need to connect the dots between Citizens United, income disparity, crony capitalism, pay-to-play, massive subsidies for fossil fuel companies. We're easing into a plutocratic society. Decisions of disbursement of tax revenues less reliant on elected officials. Special interests are usurping their authority more and more. Here we have a highly financially successful international corporation with a profitable subsidiary. Our subsidy will make them more profitable at the expense of public programs. Government Accounting Standards Board Statement 77 requires local governments to disclose key information for financial reporting purposes, amount of tax revenues forgiven with abatements. I hope that we are in compliance with that provision. This was passed in 2015. So the benefits from our largesse, primarily large outside corporations, not our community, certainly not small local business. This is government intervention in the market, not free market capitalism. We need to reverse these trends. We need the critical thinking skills applied by every legislator. To date, we have observed no profiles in courage on these issues over the past few years. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Irene Weisler, then Sarah Hess.
Hi, Irene Weiser, resident in Brookendale. I too am here to speak about the cart kill and baitment, if I can get this microphone to not fall, and to urge scrutiny and common sense as you consider their application. As has just been mentioned, this is a company with almost $2 billion in profits this past year, and they're asking for a tax abatement of a bit over $500,000. It's clear that to a company with that level of profit, $500,000 is certainly something they should be able to pay. What's more, the changes that they're proposing and the rationale that they're giving for the shaft is something that will actually make the company more profitable and, in fact, impose more hardship on the workers. The shaft will lessen the time that Cargill spends trucking them to and from the site that they're actually going to be mining, probably around half an hour each way. So another hour of work time that they're going to be able to marshal from their workers per worker, 200 according to their application. That's quite a lot of extra people hours that they're going to be making money off of. I don't understand why they can't pay for this shaft. Also, though, as we well know, there was a serious incident this past year that concerns worker safety. And I echo the comments that you've recently heard. Safety is a company's primary responsibility. Worker safety is what a company should be providing. And, in fact, it's also their legal responsibility. This is not something that a company should turn to public subsidy to request. And I urge you to think about that. I'm not as sure as a previous speaker about the environmental impacts. I think that there are significant impacts as the shaft is drilled through the Marcellus Shale into a salt cavity and what kinds of potential contamination may come to our lake. And I think that that needs to be closely scrutinized. So I would urge that before you grant this abatement, you consider, first of all, that this company, whatever idle threats they may be making that if they don't get the abatement, they're going to leave. This is not a company that can leave. The reserves are right here. So they can't just pack up and go. Also, Governor Cuomo ordered a safety review following the incident this past year. I would urge that before you grant an abatement, you become aware of whatever the results of that review are and make sure that they come into compliance. Again, you shouldn't be subsidizing safety. And last, I think that there's also environmental reviews that need to happen before this abatement be granted. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah Hess, then Joe Wilson.
Well, there's a common theme in the comments tonight. I'm Sarah Hess. I live in the city, and I'm also here to speak about Cargill. According to their application, there's a need for the mine to provide fresh air and safe access for workers. Of course, we're all in favor of safe working conditions for the employees. And I'm in favor of keeping the mine open and productive. And I also see from their application that the new shaft, as Irene just pointed out, would also increase productivity for the northern reserves. From this, I assume that it would shorten travel time, and there's some specifics about how much that would be shortened. What I am not in favor of in the application is this, their stated reason for the tax abatement. Quote, the project is currently underfunded at the corporate level, unquote. They couldn't be more obvious. They're saying it themselves. They want more corporate profits instead of paying sales tax. Like every other business, practically, every other business in the county, every individual, we all pay sales tax. But Cargill says, oh, no, we don't want to pay that. The Cargill mine in Lansing, called Cuga Mine in the database on U.S. salt mines, is the fourth largest in the nation when size is based on number of employees. Cargill has over 200 employees, according to the database, and it also has two other active mines in the U.S. In fact, three of the largest six salt mines in the country are owned by Cargill. I object to a company that made over $2 billion in profits in 2016, asking local communities and the state, because they would get half of the sales tax revenue, for $640,000. And not only asking, but then threatening to leave if the request is not granted. Really. Where do big corporations think we have the, you know, money to forgive taxes? How is it fair that Cargill is able to make so much profit and then demand more from local and state governments? Well, unfortunately, this practice of subsidizing highly profitable corporations with public money is rampant throughout the globe as one country competes with another and within the U.S. as one state competes with another. But I urge you to say to Cargill, how about using your own corporate profits to pay your sales tax? That's the way it's done. I also have just a minute to say I also support moving the energy navigator position to target budget dollars and to extend it for more than 1 year of a pilot. The idea was strongly supported by the task force, which Mike and other people were involved in. I think it would be very beneficial. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Wilson. If there's anyone else that wants to speak, I need a blue card. This is the last one I have.
Good evening, and thank you for the privilege of speaking. I intend to be repetitive. Cargo has ample resources to build this mine shaft. They earned $2.3+ million in profits last year, a 50% increase over the previous year. They have $57.4 billion in total assets, and they're asking the state to give them $8 million for this same project. Their rationales don't hold water. Possibly 3 years from some time to begin now or whenever they get their money, four new medium-skilled jobs will be created. There's no explanation of how these four jobs connect in any way with the shaft for ventilation and for egress during an emergency. If the public monies go to Cargill, it's going to cost over $2 million a job in subsidies for each of these four new jobs, if they ever come about. Cargill says that the project won't be undertaken unless they get $640,000 from the county in sales tax abatements. That's ludicrous. Of course they're going to do it. They've already invested $2.5 million in the project, and they're looking forward to getting virtually all of the rest, either from the state or from their own coffers. The life of the mine will be significantly reduced if this shaft isn't sunk and the county doesn't give them $640,000 in abatements. That's also ludicrous. A $57 billion corporation is not going to not pursue the salt that's available to them because they don't sink a shaft and because our money doesn't go to support their sinking this shaft. And finally, there's no explanation as to why the life of the mine is going to shorten as a result of the failure to get $640,000 from the county. This is just a puffery job to try and take us yokels for $640,000. I urge the four of you who can constitute the majority of the TCIDA and are here tonight not to vote for this abatement. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all the public privilege of the floor I have for tonight. Let's go to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. We have Irene Stein, who is the... Irene Stein. Irene... Weiser, who is a town board member from the town of Caroline, with us tonight. Sorry about that.
That's all right. It happens in email all the time, not quite so often in real life. But wearing a different hat now as council member from the town of Caroline. A couple of months ago, I was here to report some very exciting news that we had thought that Caroline was going to get broadband. Well, guess what? The state redrew the maps a couple of weeks ago, and Caroline is no longer included in eligible for the state funding for this. I attended a meeting this past week in Albany, a bidders conference on broadband to learn more, and apparently Charter Communications, as part of their merger deal with Time Warner, has proposed that they will cover some number of unserved households. I think it's 145,000 around the state. And reportedly, the maps have been redrawn to reflect the area that Charter proposes to cover. I have to say that I'm a little dubious of how well they'll cover it. Time Warner has already reported to the state coverage that they have provided in Caroline that doesn't exist. The line drop costs to bring a wire from the road to houses that have a setback, they've wanted to charge in the thousands and in times tens of thousands of dollars to bring a line drop to an individual household. So I'm quite concerned about this development. I don't know that there's anything to do, but I just wanted to fill you in. We're staying in communication with the broadband office, trying to get answers to some of the concerns. Kind of a mess. In other news, in good news, and now I'm wearing my TCOG hat to let you know that the Emergency Medical Services Task Force has approved a slate of members to serve on the committee. Super excited about getting that launched. We've got representation from almost every municipality, still waiting on Enfield. But otherwise, every municipality is represented, and enthusiastically. The biggest challenge is that it's a lot of people who already are involved in a lot of realms of public service, and finding a meeting time is honestly an enormous challenge. We may lose some coverage just by virtue of not being able to find a meeting time for everyone. But that's in the good news category, so thanks.
Thank you, Irene, for the good news and the bad news. Certainly, our broadband committee, Dave McKenna chairs the subcommittee there, is trying to keep up on this, so I'm sure that if you want to talk with him and his committee, he'd be helpful. We did hear at REDC a couple of weeks ago that the area that had been carved out for Time Warner is supposed to be opened up for other grants in the next round.
And what I learned, and that's sort of good news, what I learned at the meeting this past week is that Charter is going to have 4 years to complete their build out of just the lines. None of the drops to the houses are required within that 4 year period, but 4 years to complete the line build out. I do know that Tompkins County is not slotted for year one. They did list the counties that are slotted for year one. They talked about this round of broadband grants from the state being the big one and encouraged all of the vendors to put in their applications and think big because they envisioned giving most of the money away during this round. They weren't certain whether there would be a third round. If there was going to be one, they said it'll be coming this coming early in the next year. And you know, of course, we won't know what kind of coverage we've gotten from Carter at that point. And that last round they envision is just sort of a cleanup round to get whatever didn't get covered.
Martha?
Irene. Have you been in touch with Barbara Lifton or Jim Seward about this? I mean, I don't know what it, could it be political? In Albany, who knows? You know.
Yeah.
We'd be shocked, but...
We had earlier been in touch with Seward's office over, you know, with the Clarity proposal, and his office was willing to support us through DASNY, Dormitory Authority, funding. And of course, we could never procure that money because that proposal never came to fruition. This time around, we've been in touch with his office, and he suggested that we wait and see what happens through the broadband grants first. So,
okay.
Yeah.
We get Barbara Lifton involved.
Yeah, and get Barbara Lifton and maybe start talking to the Public Service Commission on it with a new tune.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you again, Irene.
Sure.
For Chair's report, I would mention that the last gasp of the Tompkins County Civil War Sesquicentennial Commemoration Commission, I got it through that, was held last week at Tompkins Cortland Community College. It was the dedication of the Nurses Memorial. The commission, over its five-year period, one of the two things that it did regarding Civil War nurses, or more than two things, but because they had very little recognition, we thought it would be appropriate to have a nurses scholarship program at the TC3 Nursing School. Almost $105,000 was raised for that, and scholarships have actually been given out now for 3 years in that program. And besides that, we thought it would be nice if there were a memorial, a physical memorial, and the Nurses Memorial money was raised from private sources through the help of the Tompkins Cortland Community College Foundation. The memorial was set up. There are figures of Civil War nurses representing not only the four nurses from Tompkins County, but all of the nurses, over 21,000, we think, that served, and that's on the northern side. On the southern side, the records are pretty scarce, but there were people who nursed, obviously, on the southern side as well. If you haven't been out, please take time to take a trip out there. They actually were crafted by artist and craftsman Rob Licht, and they each have a lantern that lights up at night. That probably doesn't date back to the Civil War since it is solar, but they're pretty nice and just kind of odd and unusual and nice to see something like this where you don't expect to see it. So, thanks to the members of the commission, thanks to TC3 and the TC3 Foundation. I think I stepped on your toes. It's time for legislature privilege of the floor. None of you wants to speak, do you? Carol, Rich, Martha.
Thank you. Thanks for calling on me first, too, because I have something a little bit different and out of the ordinary to say tonight. Every meeting, I'm tempted, you know, as we go through the roll call, I'm tempted to use different languages. You know, we all go around saying here, 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 you know, and, you know, I want to say something in Spanish, you know, estoy aquí, I am here, but estoy aquí means I'm here just physically right now. Soy aquí, I'm not sure which one is the right one they would say, but as I'm fully here, but soy aquí would be I'm fully here in my soul, permanently in my being, right? And at this time of year, in particular, I always want to answer in the Hebrew, which is hineni. Hineni, I am here. But it's not just here, physically right now. It means to be truly here, totally present, mindful, with all of one's focus and attention. And this year, I'm finally doing it. I'm saying this. I didn't want to spring it on you. Kathy wouldn't have known what to make of it. And just want to talk about it for a second, because this year our meeting and our budget decisions fall right during the 10-day period when Jews worldwide stop to take stock of our lives and reflect on ways to be fully present for the upcoming year. We realize anew that we don't really have control of whether we'll be healthy or sick, blessed with joy or challenged with unexpected hardship, or even whether we'll live or die. What we can control is whether, you know, if that moment came, will what flashes in front of us be a year, a moment, a month, whatever, of self-aggrandizement, you know, or self-dealing or whatever else? Or will it be one of working for justice and truth? Will it be one of working for fairness and equity? And we say justice first because the Torah wasn't written as a religious text. I thought a lot about whether to talk about this here at all, because I believe in the separation of religion and state, and that we shouldn't be bringing our religious beliefs here. But the Torah wasn't written as a religious text. It was written as a law book. It became a religious text later. And truth, fairness, and equity, we think about, because you can't have justice without them. So this is also the time of year when I relive the moment when I was hit by that car and lay on the ground not knowing how much of a future I'd have. So I think about that, and I returned with renewed understanding from that, that now with each decision and in each year, we can make sure that fairness and equity, justice and truth guide our choices. So if it had been my final moment 4 years ago, I would have wanted to know with my full being, hineni, that each budget choice along the way, that I'd done all I could to feed the hungry, give skills to the uneducated or undereducated, enhanced equitable access to services, and worked for clean air, pure water, and a healthier planet. And so I just want to let you know that in particular at this time of year, that's what's behind my votes. Every time I make a choice between filling one more pothole, which we all think is important, but between that and feeding one more person, that I always choose the person. And so in this spirit of hineni, of being present and of recognizing that our hears is not the only language we hear in this country. I may go start researching languages if I have time before our meetings and find you some new ways to say here in different meetings. Thanks for your forbearance for this speech.
Thank you. Rich. Rich John.
Carol, that's hard to follow. And I mean that in the sense that go after, not understand. That was very well said. And a tip of the hat to TCOG, by the way, for supporting the Housing Summit. Is Irene still here? Yeah. I had wanted to speak to the members of the audience that got up and came here tonight. I appreciate you coming in to talk about Cargill. I'm one of the members on the Industrial Development Agency. And I take your points. I think I'm going to vote in favor of this. And I'd like to share with you why I'm leaning that way, and I'd be happy to talk with you further on this issue. But one thing I'd say, when Cargo came in, and this is secondary, but they have a remarkable safety record. You know, we know about the incident with the elevator shaft earlier in the year, but I think the manager said that they haven't had a lost time incident in over 6 years, which is remarkable at an industrial facility. They take their safety very seriously, obviously, to maintain that kind of record. I note the corporation and the corporation being, I think, in Minnesota, they're based, is investing a fairly significant amount. I'm going off the top of my head, but I think it's in the neighborhood of $45 million. And I see that there's a real difference between the corporate approach and the local approach. Everything you say about Cargill and that they may well do this anyway without the sales tax abatement could be true. But I also keep in the back of my head that from a corporate level, they've got different sources for salt. If they can get that salt to a customer a nickel cheaper, they'll write off this investment. They will, you know, they would consider doing that. I don't think it's a slam dunk that they will do this no matter what. And with some element of uncertainty in my mind, I have to think about those jobs in Lansing. Lansing is in a precarious position with the power plant changes, and these are good jobs. They are safe jobs. You know, they pay health insurance. They don't seem to have a remarkable environmental consequence. We can argue about salt on the road, but the actual operation, if salt is coming from somewhere, they're doing it pretty well here. This is a one-time sales tax abatement, so it's not a property tax abatement. It would induce them to shop local, which I certainly would like them to do. And if they build this second shaft or the third shaft, it's going to likely raise the overall assessment dramatically, raising the tax rate from a property tax standpoint on an ongoing basis. And then the final thing that really was of interest to me, and I don't have the figures, but how much energy they're going to save on electrical ventilation cost. It takes an amazing amount of energy to push the air through the mine, and this will allow them to do it far more efficiently. And they brought the amount of power savings they anticipated having in a year, and it's significant. So I agree with you. I don't like the idea of giving some large, faceless corporation, multinational, a tax break. In this instance, I think the equities weigh in favor of making sure that third shaft goes in, that the mine stays in operation. We are going to add a few jobs. But anyway, happy to talk to any of you about it. Thanks.
Thank you. Martha Robertson.
And I would add that the public hearing on that project is Friday, this coming Friday at 2 o'clock at the Lansing Town Hall. And that, don't know if all IDA board members will be there, but anything that's said or turned in at that meeting would be certainly communicated to the other three members as well. two things. One is thanks for mentioning the Housing Summit. Rich, it's something that we've been working on. Megan McDonald in the Planning Department and Ed and the Planning Commissioner, along with Irene as one of the planners on the Planning Committee, we are trying to bring together the broad cross-section of the community. So we've got some events planned for Wednesday night, November 30th, and Thursday, December 1st. So that's basically an all day on December 1st. And we really want the broadest possible section, cross-section of the community, including people who live outside Tompkins County and work in Tompkins County, because we consider in commuters part of our community as well. So there'll be a lot more publicity about it coming up, but I hope people will start looking for that. It's called A Place for All of Us, Housing by Choice or by Chance. And so that'll be the week after Thanksgiving. Then I also wanted to mention, I went to a meeting yesterday at the Chamber of Commerce, the Governmental Affairs Committee. They had pulled together a group of people to talk about the drought. And I know the temperatures have been dropping, and I know it's rained a little bit, but we really, really are still in a drought. This was Fred Bond was there from the State Parks, Liz Cameron from the Health Department, folks from Cornell, from the Farm Bureau, from Bolton Point, City of Ithaca, And it was a really interesting conversation. There's been a great deal of communication and collaboration among our three water purveyors together with the health department. I just wanted one little fact. Joan Foote from Bolton Point said that kind of the week that it was announced that there really was, you know, really a serious problem and asking people voluntarily to conserve, their production, in other words, how much water people drew from Bolton Point, dropped by something like 500,000 gallons in a week without any mandatory restrictions. I maybe have the number wrong, but it was a huge drop. I'm looking at my notes. Don't remember. It was a huge drop just from people voluntarily conserving. So that says that we really probably all could take better care and on a general practice start thinking more carefully about water. This is something that we usually have to worry about having too much of. But I'm glad that the planning department, together with our emergency department, is looking ahead towards hazard mitigation and long-term planning together with health department on what do we do? You know, what are our needs going to be? Even with this big, beautiful lake that we have, we have to be able to get clean water to where it needs to go. So I just wanted to say, everybody, we are a long way from having enough rain come down from the sky yet to really feel like we're out of the woods on this.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. I just want to respond to the gentleman who talked about the Navigator program. We have what we call a voting meeting of the county budget coming up on Thursday evening. And we have something in our county budget process called an OTR, over target request. And currently, there's been a request by the planning department for $100,000 in the Navigator, to the Navigator program. I'm fairly certain in either this coming up voting meeting or some subsequent meetings following that number will increase. By some various means that we have in mind to get funding for that program. So right now, if I could say pretty certain that we would be looking at least a three-year engagement with the Navigator program. So.
Anyone else? Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to recognize somebody. I don't usually do this, but we are in budgeting right now, and I just read the mayor's budget. Figured Jim would like to hear this, but I was impressed that the tax rate will be going down, apparently, if it passes, 6.6%, which is the lowest since 2003. And the budget is actually also below the cap. So I was impressed with that, and it was interesting why it was down, and it was because of the amount of growth in the city of Ithaca. And I think that's a good testament to our community that our growth is actually offsetting and doing exactly what people say growth is supposed to do, which is offset the tax rate. So congratulations on that.
Anyone else? Will Burbank.
I just wanted to thank all the folks that came out and spoke to us tonight on a variety of issues, but specifically about the Cargill project. I'm also one of the four members of the IDA, and like Rich, I've been sort of trying to weigh the relative benefits of this project. And I have to say the manager of the plan made a fairly convincing presentation at our last IDA meeting. But there will be a hearing this Friday. Hearings for the IDA need to be done in the jurisdiction, the taxing the jurisdiction that applies. In this case, it will be at the Lansing Town Hall. And one thing that arose during the discussion of this project was scheduling of hearings and can IDA members be present. And I think we need, as IDA, need to be doing a better job of setting hearings at times when at least a significant number of members can, in fact, make the hearing.
Unfortunately, as it happens, I will not be able to make this particular hearing because it was set at a time when I cannot. But the project will likely come to the IDA on Thursday the 13th at our normal meeting, if I'm not wrong. Jim, correct me.
No, you're right.
So that'll be starting at 4 o'clock on Thursday the 13th. Anyway, thank you for coming and making, I think, some very, very strong, rational arguments, and I will continue to give them thought.
Others, Dooley? Jim, did you want to say something on that topic?
Yeah, just about the comment that Will made. The IDA, TCIDA schedules public hearings for the public. Each member of the IDA, if they are able to attend, some do, some don't. But we are given minutes of what everyone says at every public hearing. So we go to a voting meeting knowing full well what people have said. I personally have attended public hearings in the city of Ithaca at the Town of Ithaca building on big projects in downtown Ithaca, and no one shows up. There were more IDA members, and we don't, you know, we're there, and no one shows up. I'm hoping that people, if I'm feeling the wind here this evening, I'm hoping people will go out to the town of Lansing and talk about what their feelings are and how they think, the IDA should operate when it comes to the Thursday meeting next week.
Julie, forgive me, but let's finish this topic. Will?
Jim is entirely right that many hearings that we've had, no one will show up, and no one wants to sit and essentially in an empty hall and do nothing. One of the problems that we somewhat unpredictably, we have hearings where significant number of people showed up. Typically, there's the staffer will conduct the hearing and make a recording, and then we will get summaries of what was said. And frequently these are handed out actually at the meeting where the decision is being made. To my mind, that does not come does not do as nearly good a job of I think honoring our duty to the folks that we're representing. And I think it's important for members, as many as possible, to hear what is being said as it's being said. And what I'm calling for is that we at least before hearings are set, that we attempt to survey the availability of members and just not set them at times when essentially very few or nobody can come.
Dooley Kiefer.
Thanks, Mike. Commenting with respect to Cargill, environmental issues have not really been discussed at this legislature with respect to Cargill. And the EMC has an environmental review committee that has been paying attention and trying to educate themselves more and more about exactly what this fourth mine shaft will bring to the project. Its benefits are clear, but the actual continuation of this mining and the geological setting where it's taking place has received recent scrutiny by some very well-respected geologists recently. And the EMC's ERC committee has sent a letter to DEC detailing all this additional information, which I will not attempt to summarize or go into tonight. But it's not entirely clear that the environmental issues are moot. With respect to the second Monday in October becoming Indigenous Peoples Day, I'm not certain whether back in 1977, when a request was made for there to be a day proclaimed Indigenous Peoples Day, that request was intended to be on the same day as Columbus Day. I don't think we should all be proud of what happened when following Columbus discovery of a land that was already here and populated. But it certainly has now become an important holiday for Italians in our country, another immigrant group. And to have both days on the same day seems unwise to me. The attempt, I assume, is to have Columbus Day subsumed within Indigenous Peoples Day. But I would be much happier to see us have Indigenous Peoples Month or something like that. I was not here. I didn't see the proclamation. I've been out of town until I got a look at the agenda and listened to Leslin read it so beautifully tonight. I wish it were worded somewhat differently, and I just wanted to express my feelings about that. Thank you, Mike.
Anyone else?
I would like to say that there's a vice presidential debate on at 9 o'clock tonight, and I hope we get out of here by then.
Are you in it?
Just saying. No.
Thank you.
Carol.
Yes.
We had you once.
I know. I just have a question for the IDEA people, but anybody who wants to watch the vice presidential debate after the end of our meeting at whatever pace we need to do it is free to come to my house where I have recorded it or will be recording it. It's already set to record. You're welcome to join me. Just a quick question for one of the IDEA folks. Do you get either transcripts or if people hand in their statements, their written comments that they're making to the body during the hearing, is there a stipulation that the IDEA get those?
I think if somebody hands in a statement, we will get that.
All right. I do have one rather sad thing to mention tonight before we leave privilege of the floor. And that is we received news that our retired and former Commissioner of Public Works, William Mobbs, has passed away after a very serious but not too lengthy illness. Bill was with us for a lot of years and supervised a lot of things, including not only our highway department, but the construction of the airport, the solid waste facility, and other programs that continue. Bill was a person that everyone liked. And he, after he retired here, he went off and did consulting work. And I know most recently was helping the village of Dryden with its DPW work. So we're sorry to lose Bill. And why don't we take a minute of silence to think about Bill Mobbs. Thank you. We'll proceed now to reports from, first of all, our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks for saying kind words about Bill Mobbs. I think immortality is when your legacy, your name, your contributions last well beyond our lives, and certainly that's the case for Bill Mobbs. I mean, I talk to county employees often, particularly in the physical services, and it's rare that I have a conversation with them about what they're trying to accomplish, about how they manage, about how they relate to the community, that they don't refer to the lessons learned from Bill Mobbs. So it really is a loss to the community and to public service. I have two quick items to report. First of all, I've been talking for some time about the Municipal Courts Task Force and how Ray Schlatter is going to be here to present the findings. And I believe that 2 weeks from tonight, Ray Schlatter will be here to present the findings of the task force, which will include the notion of creating a centralized DWI court where everything is diverted to a single court, something that may be possible with action by the chief judge of New York State, but also would likely require a third county court judge, which is something that we will be talking about as a part of that. So I wanted to post you on that. The other quick bit of good news is that I think everyone now knows that the governor did sign the affordable housing exemption that this legislature passed some time ago, which Paul Mazzarella was good enough to identify and articulate well in terms of the problems that tax law was creating, that Jay Franklin took and carved into language that would work when it went to Albany for consideration for application in our county, that Barbara Lifton and Tom O'Mara were not only willing to sponsor but advocate, and they did, and the bills were passed in both houses, I think unanimously, and approved by the governor over the past week. So to everybody who was involved in that, it was really a great effort, and it's important. The work isn't done. Jay's coming back quickly, I think as early as tomorrow, with enabling legislation, I think that's tomorrow, Gio, to implement on our end. Similar actions need to be taken by the town and the city and the school district to make sure that all pieces of the tax puzzle are positively affected by what we've been able to achieve. But it really is an important step forward that took a lot of work, so thanks to everybody who was involved in that. And that's my report.
Thank you. Questions for Joe? Martha Robertson.
On the possibility of a DWI court, if that were to happen, would there need, I mean, in order to make that happen, would there need to be any county money in that?
On an ongoing basis for personnel, no. However, recall that our part of the deal is that we have to provide the physical space for the courts. So if another chambers had to be created and room for staff and so forth, that would fall on the county. Now, the state has been, you heard Arell during his budget presentation say, the state's been really good about trying to call some of these improvements tenant improvements that they pay for to the extent that they can. But I think worst case would be the county would be on the hook for providing the physical space for that third county court judge.
And remind me, I'm trying to remember the layout of the building over there that I've rarely been in since we moved here. Is there an actual room? Is there room for chambers? Or do we have to start from scratch?
I don't think there's an existing office, a chambers for a judge. So we'd have to scrounge for space inside that building. Honestly, it's been a while since I was over there, too, and I don't know whether there's still unused space in the clerk's area that might be used for other things or not. That we would, again, as we talk about a third judge, that's certainly something that we're going to have to look at.
Because we've been talking about it in terms of one of the things that could facilitate people moving through our jail quicker. So as a measure that would reduce board outs, that kind of an investment would make sense. It certainly would help people to, you know, not have to sit around waiting for a court date if we had the number of courts that we think, according to our population, we would be justified in having. Okay, the other question is about lobbying, and once we hear that report from Ray, is there, because I don't know, you know, about the executive budget, does that, are we already kind of like late to try to get something like that into the executive budget for this coming year?
We'd need to get into the OCA budget and then the governor's budget. We will be getting pretty close. So TCOG really was the sponsor of this study. And we've talked to Mike and Dan, and I have talked about this. We probably need them to go first to take some kind of an action that adopts the recommendations of the group. We can then follow after that. I think a letter probably is appropriate to the state as a placeholder, at least, relatively soon, certainly before the end of this month.
Okay, so I hope that's something we can kind of really be thinking about the calendar and trying to move it quickly. We might lose a window otherwise. Thank you.
You're exactly right, Joe. We talked about this, and we're ready to send the letter. But I think that since it was a TCOG task force, the TCOG needs their blessing at their meeting. And I don't imagine we won't have it, but I think we need to follow that process.
And we have prepared a draft resolution for them to look at.
Any other questions for Joe? Let's go to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
I don't have a report. I did want to say a few words about Bill Mops, though. Bill, I mean, we all like to think of ourselves as irreplaceable, but Bill really was. I mean, when he left, he was Commissioner of Public Works, and when he left, we just could not find anyone else who could do that, who could achieve the respect of all the units. And Bill wasn't only respected, he was really loved. You know, Bill was smart, he was kind, he was wise, and he remained friends to me and a lot of us long after he left. So we're sorry about the news.
Thank you, Jonathan. Let's go to Rick Snyder, our finance director.
I have just one quick item for tonight. We have sold $2,306,000 of bands or short-term notes in anticipation of our next bond issue, which is February 14th. The previous notes are coming due very soon, next week, and we wanted to not do a major bond issue at this time of the year. So we added four more months to the existing schedule for these bands. So the $2.3 million were only going out 4 months, but we priced those bands today and we got a good interest rate, not as good as we had hoped, but it was a little over 1%, 1.089% for this money for 4 months. The buyer was J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, and this refinances notes that we have floated for the Ellis Hollow Phase 2 project. We are paying down approximately $934,000 of the previous held notes. Most of that comes from contributions from the general fund and from the state and federal government that have put in their portions towards the project. So we'll be finalizing the big upcoming bond issue within the next couple of months, and that's scheduled for issuance on around February 14th. So I thought I would bring you this small tentative financing that tells you how we're getting over the next few months until we do the next big financing. And that financing will include some old projects you've seen before, some new ones that are in this year's budget for the first time. I believe the bond authorizations that still need to be have a commitment from the legislature will be on the next October 18th legislative session. And that's all I have for tonight.
Questions? Rich.
1.089 is disappointing.
1.089 is disappointing because we've been paying, we got, since I've been here over 3 years, our band rates have been about 0.25%, 0.5%. The last ones were the highest we paid were about 1%, but that was for a full year. So going shorter than that, just a third of that, I thought we would pick up something much less than one. But hey, what the markets are where they are at, and we take what we can get.
What do you anticipate on the bonds?
I really don't know at this time because the markets can change quite a bit between now and February 14th. I think once we get past the election and things settle down, we'll have a better prediction. I think what Joe always budgets, though, quite conservatively for these bond issues are around
between 3.5 and 4.
3.5 and 4.
Depending how long we go.
The 30-year rate on residential is 3.5, right? It just bumped up.
Which is still really great. I mean, that's you can't hardly do any better than that. But again, after the elections and the first of the year, markets tend to be you know, quite a bit different at that point. So we'll see how that goes.
I always like to tell people that when I started my legal practice during the big inflationary period, I closed an awful lot of home mortgages with people at 13.5%.
Mike, could I just offer one thing? Just a little body language there. When Rick talked about 1%, those are short-term bond anticipation notes, real short-term. When I talked about when Rich suggested that what we assume when we project debt, when we do the capital program, it's 3.5 to 4%, but those are bonds that run as long as 20 years. So those are long-term bonds, different interest rates.
Looking at me when you say that.
I just saw your body language.
Well, I'm just
1%, 3%.
If there's some money we could recapture there. For
thank you, Rick.
Room.
I'm happy we didn't go to Wells Fargo.
We might have an account with them, but right. Nobody really knows at this point.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda tonight? Martha Robertson.
Yes, you should have in your packet Resolution G, authorizing 2016-1 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, Inc. and Tompkins County. And this went through PDEC on September 21st. I just didn't get onto this agenda.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Any discussion? All those in favor of adding it to the agenda tonight, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else? Let's go to the consent agenda. We have an advisory board appointment to the Environmental Management Council, Thomas Shelley, who is a City of Ithaca representative. Resolutions from the committees on the consent agenda, if you want them off, you want to talk about them, just say off. Out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution A, budget adjustment to transfer funds from the DM fund balance to the Highway Machinery Vehicle Fund Highway Division. That's ID 6594. Out of Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution B, in support of Town of Dryden Transportation Alternatives Program grant application for the Dryden Trail. That's ID 6614. Resolution C, acceptance of grant from the Park Foundation for the HeatSmart Tompkins 2 program of Solar Tompkins, ID 6611. And Resolution D is the acceptance of grant from the Park Foundation and additional contributions to support the 2016 Housing Summit. That's ID 6612. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? Carol, seconded by Glenn. All those in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. We'll go to reports of standing committees now. We'll start with the Public Safety Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Yeah, we haven't had another meeting since the last one I reported on.
Are there questions for Peter? Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Health and Human Services Committee will meet on October 17th. We will continue review of our departments that report to Health and Human Services, and this time it will be the Office of Human Rights. That's my report.
Questions for Leslie? Boy, we're burning rubber tonight. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
I think everybody wants to make sure to get to the debates tonight.
Facilities met last Monday. We passed several resolutions, including the one that was on the consent agenda. Also out of facilities, we audited a final payment for Matco Electric floor modifications and jail project, and that was for a little over $9,000. We also passed resolution from Tompkins County Recycling Facility Upgrade Project. That's approximately $551,000 total for quite a few changes there, and also consideration. In fact, they're going to have to do off-hours work so that the facility can keep going. Let's see. On the highway, we had the one that was on the consent agenda, as I said. We also authorized bridge construction bidding for Red Mill Bridge and West Mallory Road Bridge. And we authorized to execute a supplemental agreement with Delta Engineers for bridge replacement design services for Game Farm Road Bridge. And also audited a final payment for Silver Line Construction for County Road 103, Groton City Road Replacement. I believe that's a bridge, actually. And various capital payment summaries and so on and so forth. And that's my report. Any questions?
Carol.
Not necessarily at this last meeting, but I'm just wondering if Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, I was on it for quite a number of years, but now it's been, a year and a half since I have been on it. Have you had any discussions about the Public Works Commissioner position?
No, we have not.
Okay, thanks.
Anything else? Thank you, Dave. Transportation Committee will meet on October 12th. Questions? Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move Resolution E, adoption of local law enacting the late application procedure for the low-income senior citizen real property exemption. This is the resolution that we had the public hearing for earlier today.
Anna Kellis. Discussion. Ready to vote? Dooley?
In case anybody doesn't remember, the giving Jay Franklin, our county assessor, the ability to accept late application for good cause means, in his view, that good cause will be either the death of the applicant's spouse, child, parent, brother, or sister, or an illness of the applicant or of the applicant's spouse, child, parent, brother, or sister, which actually prevents the applicant from filing on a timely basis, and this needs to be certified by a doctor's note, essentially. So I think it's important for the public to understand that those are the ideas of what good cause means to get this extension.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That is unanimous. Anything else, Dan?
Yes. So our next meeting is tomorrow, Wednesday, October 5th at 3:30 in these chambers. I've got an interesting agenda. We are going to be discussing and voting on the adoption of county policy on the use of social media. We are also...
Is that countywide?
So just to clarify, this is would be the departments, the county itself, using social media to get our message out and the guidelines that would go along with that. We're also going to be having a discussion, no vote, no resolution at this point. First discussion about the possible use of the county accepting credit cards for the payment of county taxes. Something that we hope to add to the agenda is a resolution to start the local implementation of the state law that our county administrator talked about earlier that allows for the housing trust tax exemption that was passed at the state for the benefit of Tompkins County. And then, not tomorrow, but coming soon, the Government Operations Committee is going to be working on the issue of legislator salaries for 2018 through 2021. So if you have thoughts about what you would like that to look like, then it is not too early to start letting us know how you're thinking about that. And that is my report.
Any questions for Dan? Thank you, Dan. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. We met on September 21st and then again this afternoon at 5 o'clock. In the September meeting, Michael Stamm and Ed Marks talked about the energy navigator position, that idea, and we really wanted to hear from both of them about where that position should be, whether it was TCAD or the planning department, and so we had a good chance to have a back and forth about that, and also I think become comfortable with the idea, at least most of us, with the idea of a $50,000 three years of one-time funding proposal for that for that position, that we thought that would work. We heard annual reports from the Water Resources Council and the EMC, and then that was in September. And then this afternoon we did the grants and that and the trail support for Dryden that were on the consent agenda. Our next meeting is October 19th, 3:00 in this room. And then I have the transit resolution. If there are no questions.
Are there any questions? Go ahead and move your resolution.
Thank you. Authorizing 2016-1 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit and Tompkins County. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Discussion. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you. That's all I got.
Thank you, Martha. Let's go to Charter Review Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
I think I reported at our last meeting that we had our last meeting and we have a charter with revisions to recommend to the legislature. So there's nothing new. I hope we don't have to meet again.
Julie, you have a resolution?
I can't remember, do I?
Resolution F.
Thank you.
Wait, before she moves, can I just ask?
Yes, you can ask a question.
So before you move that one, would you be willing to have us hear a little bit more about what's in it? We didn't get the red line version of that until today. And I haven't had a chance to look at more than the first few pages of it. So it would be helpful to hear about it before
moving it. I understand that Kathy Covert sent out the red line version a week ago.
But that's
Kathy,
correct.
I think it was the 29th.
What I got didn't show red line until this morning.
It was sent out last week.
Well, I know it was supposed to, and I thought Kathy had done it.
It was.
I don't think it translated to everyone because mine didn't have that either. So I'm asking.
Well.
Go ahead,
Carol. Finish.
So we have a lot of business that we do in committees where the parts of it that might affect another program committee goes through that second program committee. So if there's a planning committee, a PDEC committee item that might impact the highways, you know, or bridges or roads or something, we also send it to that committee. Or if there's a personnel-related matter in any other committee, it goes, or a budget, it also goes through budget. So I just, process-wise, given that we're also in the middle of doing the whole budget, it just seems to me that it would be preferable to introduce the kind of deliver to us the items that are in there, maybe have a whole presentation on that tonight. Like, give it, you know, take 10, 15 minutes more or more, rather than discuss the process here as we have a resolution on the floor to do that, but to hear a little more about the substance. And then get a sense of the body about whether there are program committees that want the chance to look more closely at one or the other of these. I might feel differently about one in a committee I'm part of and somebody else. So to do that and then decide whether we're ready to bring this. That would be my preference if you're amenable.
Yeah, just I had asked to have it emailed, red line copy emailed, and I got, and Kathy did send it to me. I was, and I think copied everybody else, but I got busy and didn't happen to open it until this morning, or last night. It is good that we have We got the hard copy in our packets today. I guess it was in my mailbox today anyway. So I would, I guess, it's a like 65 pages or something, and it's been 2 years' work by the committee. I would really like to make sure that we have a presentation, you know, just kind of walking through the changes and, you know, what's important that we should know about, whether that happens before we actually set the public hearing. The issue is always when, once you set the public hearing and you have the thing that you're holding the hearing on, if you subsequently make changes, you have to have another hearing. So I guess the resolution that's in our packet, I hope we can at least change the date on that, or maybe just not even set the hearing yet. I'd like at least to have a presentation here so the public also will know what is being proposed.
Julie?
Well, working from the other direction, I think it's not good practice to have a public hearing on the same night vote on whatever the public hearing was on. So I'd like to make sure that the public hearing is separated from the voting meeting, if possible. The idea that, unlike all our other committees, the work of the Charter Committee needs to be parceled out in pieces to other standing committees is a novel idea. I don't remember doing that 10 years ago, but it has merit. And I would expect that anyone on one of those other committees would immediately turn to the part of the charter that they are responsible for to look at it and see, well, this is interesting. Maybe we better be prepared to ask questions and speak at the public hearing ourselves. So one can react variously. I am not anxious to push this off, setting a public hearing. I'm not averse to making some kind of summary presentation to this legislature, but it's hard to know which changes will be important to which legislators. So to ask for a presentation on the major changes, that's not difficult because there aren't very many major changes, but there are lots of little changes. I'm not prepared to do that tonight, Martha. I didn't know that that's what you wanted tonight. I've been out of town, so I certainly didn't have notice of your concern until just now, really. So I can tell you that not every change in the charter was by unanimous vote of the Charter Committee. We didn't have unanimity on every change, but it was always a majority that ruled. And if there is a particular part of the charter you'd like me to try to address now from memory, I'd be glad to try to do it now.
No, I mean, we have big screens. The public doesn't even know what we're looking at. And I mean, I don't know if a redline version is even on the website or if, I mean, you know, and it's a lot to go through. I just feel like it would be worth our time and the public's time to actually see the document and scroll through it and say, well, here's some, obviously a lot of them are wording changes, and I see that. But I think if it's worth four people's time to do this for 2 years, it's worth us taking 10 minutes at a meeting to walk through it.
I don't think you could scroll through the document in 10 minutes because it's so many pages. And I, Mike, do you have any guidance?
Well, I was going to say a couple things, and I'll get Peter and was it Will over there. But the committee talked about this, how this should be to be laid out. We've had a lot of snide remarks about taking 2 years for this. So we try to bring it to a head. Probably the most controversial item has already been disposed of by this legislature when you decided not to move the issue of an appointed versus elected sheriff to hearing. So that's gone by the by. The other things that have changed in the charter are significant, but not, in my view, as controversial as that. The committee, when we discussed it and duly ably led the discussion, we said that we ought to have at least a month for the legislature to have a chance to look at this. And that's why we picked the date that we did. Just remember, we're not talking, this resolution, all it does is set a public hearing, does not adopt any changes to the charter at this point. So it's up to Dooley and Dan and Peter if they want to put this out further, if the, and the rest of the legislature wants to do that. But you don't think we can get it done in a month? I mean, is that what I'm hearing out here? And I'm hearing Dooley offer to make a presentation, but it wouldn't be right to ask her to do that tonight.
Right.
Also, we're working on an op-ed piece. Dan has done a draft of it already to send out to the public so they can be aware of some of the highlight changes. For example, the Independent Redistricting Committee, which we had for the last redistricting, has been added into the charter in exactly the same way that we had it before. Carol.
So a couple of things that I hope weren't misinterpreted by the committee members that I said just before. First of all, I really appreciate the work that all four committee members have done. I think it's an incredible amount of work, and I really appreciate it. And I think that most of what I scrolled through, and I did try to open the document when it first came out, and I really, the red line didn't come through, or not yellow highlighting, and what I first saw, and it did today. So there's a lot in there. I appreciate what you did. I don't think we're asking this committee to do anything that any other, you know, thing committees don't regularly do. You know, this issue of, you know, check the work. It's not a matter of that at all. And it's not even, it's in addition to a matter of being the public, having the public a chance to weigh in, to have our staff in the various departments have a chance to make sure that they've looked at the areas that might impact their work. And as I scrolled through today, some areas just that came to my attention, I'm sure that mine may not be the same ones as Jim's or Dave's or somebody else's, but were, you know, one was on the redistricting that you just mentioned. I don't know, you know, does our assessment department, did they ever have a chance to weigh in you know, how did the process work this last time? And that was a lot of work for them. They spent hours and hours and hours on that outside of their usual scope of work. So, you know, maybe GO would want to have a discussion with a chance to look at, you know, how did that work for you on looking back of each decade, you know, the processes there. The other one that occurred to me was personnel. You know, like, are there civil service implications related to the proposed changes? There's a lot of titles. Like, there were, like, quite a few, just even title changes, if not job changes. Did budget and personnel might want to have a chance, and I certainly want to know, having just heard and paid attention for the very first time to the personnel process on the budget presentation, where we heard that each title change takes more than I thought it did, and also that a bunch of them need to apparently go to the state for approval. So, you know, I just, you know, we might want to look at, has that happened? And for me, the other was a third one, the public works. So that's why I asked Dave if they'd had a chance, because we spent hours and hours on facilities and infrastructure, Joe, when you first came in. Remember those big charts on the wall? I think we had extra F&I committee meetings as we temporarily disbanded the Public Works Committee. Mm-hmm. And, boy, on the same day that Bill Mobbs died, we're going to immediate, you know. I just think we ought to just have a chance. Those were my three that I happened to notice, but there may be others. And I, you know, I happened to talk to Dan at length yesterday, and you were really helpful in being able to outline the areas that you knew of that were going to be changes to this.
Okay.
So maybe somebody from the committee could present some of this.
I've got Peter and then Jim, then Will. I'm sorry, Will, did I miss you? Peter, Jim, Will.
I can understand what Carol's thoughts are, and I've also been, I don't know, it seems to me we've been on this for 2 years talking about this. But I guess I'd like to ask those that have been through it before, I've never gone through one of these before, is what's the precedent? Is it? It does seem to me reasonable what Carol is saying, that the whole, that the county ought to have a chance to look at it before it goes further to the public or so forth. And I just wonder, what have we done before? Is, are we following exactly what we did before?
I believe we are.
Then I believe we should not, we should not change it.
Jim?
I don't want to seem like a spoil sport here, but this discussion is just in a vacuum. There is nothing has been moved to be put on the floor, and all of a sudden there's been a 15-minute talk about this thing, and it's not there. You know, it's kind of like I'm wondering. And I heard it started out by saying, Dooley, would you like to do something? And I haven't heard Dooley's voice since then. And, you know, we have to do something with this. Either pull it, move it, vote it up, vote it down, but please do something with it.
Will, I'm going to go back to Dooley.
Jim is, of course, right. I guess my appeal is that we slow it down just a little bit. I don't think this is time sensitive. I think there's been a call for a walking us through the key changes, not every last word, but the ones that the committee chair feels were substantive or controversial, giving all the body a chance to read it, and then setting the date of the public hearing. So I think it's highly unlikely we will be compelled to actually make changes. I think what we have is very, very good from what I've read, and it will be ready to go to the hearing. But I think it's just a good process for us to have a presentation before we do that. So I would respectfully ask just to withdraw it and bring it back for a setting here, public hearing at our next meeting, or after we've done the presentation.
So, committee members, Dan, do you have a reaction? I heard Peter's reaction.
I just trust your judgment, Julie.
Just wow.
What I would like to ask my committee members right now is brainstorming. What are the important changes that we made in this? One, Carol mentioned, we are moving not unanimously on committee, but by majority vote, to do away with the Public Works Commissioner and create four more department heads for Joe to oversee, which he's been doing anyway in the interim. That's one of the big changes. Someone else have one of the big changes in mind?
Julie, I think the point is that they want to look at the charter and then have the committee say yes and be sure you know this, and be sure you know this, and be sure you know that. And I think we can do a presentation like that. At least I would hope we could. I don't think we're going to do Dan actually counted up the changes, and he told me there were 300 of them. I don't think we need to.
No, the major changes.
300 changes, but I guess the issue that I'm wondering is whether we're going to set the public hearing tonight or not.
Well, I will certainly.
Question.
Go ahead, Julie, and then Martha has a question.
I'll move this resolution that came out of the Charter Committee. If someone wants to second it, then we can have the discussion continuing, not in the vacuum that Jim pointed out.
Absolutely. I will gladly second it.
Well, I actually saw Peter's hand first, but thank you, Jim. And now I'm going to open it for discussion to Martha.
So the question is, I appreciate that this would be set for November 1st, so obviously we could have a presentation next legislature meeting. My question is, if we were to make changes, say if we were to discuss something at the next legislature meeting and say, gee, you know, we think we should do it this way rather than that, what's the subject of the public hearing? Is it what we've got tonight, or can we do that on October 18th or whatever it is, and then change, you know, and then that'll be subject to the public hearing? I guess I'm looking at Jonathan.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Is that it? Should I answer that question?
Yes, please.
Okay. No, today you're just setting the public hearing, but if there are changes from the time the law is at the time of the public hearing, then you would have to have another one, not from today. So if the public hearing, which is almost a month from now, there are changes made before the public hearing, that's fine, so long as there are changes aren't made after the public hearing.
Okay, so if at the next ledge meeting, as a body, we vote to or just agree to make other changes, then that can be what goes in front of the public. That's what you're saying, right? On November 1st.
Yes, but I mean, procedurally, it's somewhat odd, of course, because it wouldn't really be before you until there's some resolution. When they set the public hearing actually doesn't refer to any specific, you know, there's no law attached to the public hearing. So at the time of the public hearing, if the committee, I mean, it's usually coming from a committee, if the committee makes some changes or whatever, could be upon advice of the legislature. Of course, the legislature is not yet voting on it. Then what is there for the public to see would be what the public would be commenting on, and that's what you really couldn't change before voting.
Okay, because what's in our packet is a version of the charter.
Right.
And that's what's now in front of the public. That's what the public believes is the subject of the public hearing. But that might be changed. Okay, if it's changed before November 1st, then
yeah,
that's okay.
I think if it's changed in time before the public hearing, that would be fine.
Thank you.
Let's see. We've got Jim, Anna.
I had a question about what Jonathan said.
Go ahead, Dooley, and then
Martha.
After Jim and Anna, we got
since this, all these pages came out of a particular legislative committee, does that committee have to be the one to make whatever changes are recommended by the legislature at its next meeting in order for that to be official, Jonathan?
I believe that would be the appropriate way to do it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, okay. You know, in order to have something that is presented to the public, that it should come out of a committee.
So we might have to meet again, Charter Committee. Okay.
If there are changes, yeah.
On that?
Yeah.
Can I follow up to that? So.
Real quick, is it a question?
It's a quick question on that. So that's often done, is that often done by just the committee meeting for 5 minutes before the legislature meeting to say, yeah, what got changed in that other committee, what we're doing?
No, I mean, the committee needs to meet. The committee needs to follow all the rules regarding notice of the meeting itself.
So when we do something at PDEC, for example, that then goes to budget committee, then PDEC may have a quick meeting. Then what comes to the legislature is often what came out of budget committee.
Right.
So
I mean, what comes to the legislature could be what comes out of any committee. And typically, like if one committee passes something, that's all it's needed to come back to the legislature. Legislature could vote on that.
Jim?
I'm going to pass to Anna.
Anna?
I get the desire for the legislature to just catch up with a presentation. That's appealing to me, only because I'm very curious about your thoughts. But I have, from what I've seen so far, I'm not seeing any substantive changes that I would request. My concern about the conversation, we're exploring what's legal, which is very, very important, but I feel like the other consideration is whether or not, if we do make any substantive changes prior to the public hearing, that the public has enough time to review the version that they will be commenting on. So I would at least, if that's what we decide ultimately, that we make a cutoff date. Even if that's not a requirement legally, I think that is just a sign of respect for the public and having the opportunity to review it. That's the only thing I would request.
Dan?
First of all, I just wanted to mention briefly addressing the concern about whether people within the county, the staff and such, have had enough time. The department heads for each part of the charter we were reviewing were at the table, and very often it was they who submitted the suggested changes. So the staff has very much been a part of it. The county administrator was at every single charter review committee meeting, and obviously he's in touch with all the departments. County attorney was at every single charter review committee meeting. So if there's any question that people within the county haven't vetted it, that's not really a valid concern, in my opinion. I thought I would take 2 minutes to run through what most of us have considered the most substantive changes. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, obviously, but at least you'll know what the topics are that we think are the biggest changes. As Mike mentioned, there are over 300 changes as I counted them. Some of them are single words. Some of them are, you know, full pages. I still count that as one change. So the number 300 is not really that significant. It just means there's a lot of yellow in your document. There are three names suggested to departmental names that would change. One is that the personnel department would become the human resources department. One is that the planning department would become the planning and sustainability department. And one is that the division of solid waste would become the Department of Recycling and Materials Management. There were a couple of changes that we would characterize as describing practices as they exist rather than as they were written. In other words, they were written down in the charter, but over time the procedures have changed, so we tried to rewrite the charter to reflect how the procedures are actually happening. Examples of those would be the budget process. That's a fairly long section that was changed, so I can't give you a lot of details on that. You should take a look at it. But the way that the budget is organized and presented is now written to reflect the way it's actually done. Another example of that would be Office of Workforce Development. There were a lot of procedures outlined in that one. Since the last time the charter has been revised, federal law has changed, so we changed the charter to reflect what the federal law now says. As was mentioned, we've eliminated the Public Works Department. We haven't had a Public Works Department in many years, but it's still in the charter. Under the old charter, there was a Public Works Department and then four divisions underneath it. Now those four divisions become full departments, and those are Highway Department, Facilities, Airport, and Recycling and Materials Management. The Independent Redistricting Commission, as was mentioned, the procedure that was used last time is now embedded in the charter. Before, it was just kind of adopted as a one-time measure for that redistricting. Now it would be in the charter itself. And then the last big change concerns special elections to fill vacant county legislature seats. And under the current charter, it says that we have to have that election within 75 days of the vacancy, and this would increase it to 85 days. This was done to address some concerns in the community that there just wasn't enough time to organize a campaign and to have the public fully vet their candidates. We didn't go longer than that because we felt that it would be unfair to the constituents, the residents of that district, to have nobody representing them for an extended length of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Anything else, Dooley?
No, I'm trying to recall what the implications are. We will have at the next legislature meeting a presentation pretty much tracking what Dan just gave you now with maybe a little more detail. And there will be a public hearing. And then that's set for a month from now. And thereafter, we will act at the next meeting, we will act on the charter changes. However, following public hearing, there may very well be some things that are brought up by the public or by legislators still thinking further, and it will require us discussing if we want to make changes, and so there may need to be another public hearing before we vote. But that still keeps it, I think, in a reasonable time frame for us to have both legislative and public input. So I hope that this resolution will pass.
Okay, we have on the table a resolution to set the public hearing, ready to vote.
Is it on the floor?
It's on the, floor.
No, I have a question.
Carol?
So I have a couple of questions. One for Joe, and since they've been sitting here, for Jay and for Amy. Joe, how many people report to you?
Right now, there's 27 departments, but not all report to me. So the DA and the clerk, Jonathan, Rick, don't report to me. So let's say about 20.
20 plus your own staff is another?
Five.
About 25. Okay. Thank you. Do you have any idea what best practices are for how many direct reports somebody should have?
No, but when we talk about the substantive issue, I'll be happy to share my opinions on public works and how that's organized. I don't know that you want to have that discussion tonight, but I will be happy to weigh in.
I will want to hear more about. I think you're a superhuman, Joe, and so if you assure us you're staying for the next 10 years, I'm good with this for the next 10 years. If we might not have to be able to duplicate you, I would have to think about it. Okay, then I had one for, they're talking back there, so I don't want to put them on the spot, but I had one for Jay and one for Amy. Maybe Jay first. So, Jay, you don't have to weigh in now, but I my question for you would be, are you okay going through the same process that we did on redistricting? How much extra work was that for you, the way we did it this past time versus, you know, the few times before that? You probably have to be at a mic. Sorry to make you get up.
I wouldn't be the department head to ask. It would be probably Greg Potter and his GIS unit. They were the ones who came up with all the different variations. My office wasn't involved.
You just had to sit through all the meetings. Okay.
It was IT.
Okay, thanks. And then I had one for Amy. What are the civil service implications related to the proposed changes? You know, what's involved, who has to approve them, and how long does it take? And are there, you know, I don't know, this issue of whether the other department heads are likely to have concerns about any of this, but okay. In particular the civil service implications. And the state.
Okay. So there are several positions that are either changed in the charter variations of the title even. Any titles have to match our local civil service rules appendices, you know, perfectly, the title. So if there are title changes, for instance, the my title, Commissioner of Personnel, changing to Commissioner of Human Resources, we have to submit to the State Department of Civil Service justification for the title change. And in that case, the scope of duties isn't changing, so it's not likely to, you know, undergo a lot of scrutiny by the state. Other positions, title changes, the airport director, the highway director, facilities director, now those, and solid waste manager, those are now departments under the new charter revision, and previously they were submitted to the state for consideration to be in the non-competitive classification instead of the competitive classification, but those petitions were denied because the state didn't deem them to be true independent departments. Now that they are, they're likely to be approved by the state through our submission. So there is some work involved on our part. There are, I count, about six submissions that we would need to do to the state. You know, varying level of work as far as putting together the packets that they require, that the state requires, and the resolution, and certain procedural steps we have to follow. But I think that we'll be successful with the six that are identified.
Okay. Did you know you were going to have to do this amount of work before today?
I wasn't sure exactly how many titles would be affected, but six is not too bad.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. We don't want to really get into discussing the charter changes too much, but I wanted to indulge. I've got Will and then Jim.
I would like to move to amend the amendment that we table this resolution until our next meeting, which will be the 18th.
That's a motion to postpone.
If I get a second, I'll say why.
A motion to postpone until the 18th. Is there a second on the motion to postpone by Anna? Discussion on the motion to postpone until the 18th. That is the whole resolution setting the public hearing. Rich.
I would support the motion to postpone if the legislators would take it upon themselves to all read the changes and pass any questions or comments on to the committee within the next week so that they have time before the 18th, and that we post the redline version on our website so that members of the public can see as well.
On the motion to postpone, Anna.
That was exactly what I was going to say, Rich. Thank you. The whole reason that I seconded this was because I do want all of us to just take the time, read it, and be ready to have this discussion and be done with it and still have the public hearing. The only other thing that I would request is that we have all of the questions that we need ahead of time if there's any subsequent presentations that are needed, so we're not doing it on the floor as we are tonight.
On the motion to postpone, Carol, your own motion. Will's motion.
It was not my motion, and I didn't even second it, although I would have. Can I just ask when are we expecting to have our budget vote? It was on the draft. It's relevant because I spent today.
It would be November 15th.
November 15th. So, personally, I'd rather postpone it longer than that because I spent today, the time I was going to spend, you know, working on the budget and my amendments, trying to get through as much of this as I could. And, you know, I think we're all going to continue to be focused on the budget appropriately. And I'd rather do this, you know, have this scheduled so that we are really able to pay full attention to it. But
I certainly support putting it off at least that long, if not longer.
Will?
So I thought this was a reasonable length of time. It does, as Anna's pointed out, give us all the chance to read the documents. I got a hard copy. Kathy, did that go to everybody? Does everybody have a hard copy?
Not a hard copy,
okay.
No.
But anybody who would want it could get it in hard copy form. I appreciate Dan's walking us through the key points. I would hope that on the 18th we could build into the schedule a presentation for the benefit of the public with the points projected. Maybe just a quick explanation of what this charter is. I mean, I think most people don't know necessarily. So, and then at that point, I suspect there will not be any need to send it back to committee, but we would have that option. And then we could also move forward with a public hearing.
All right. Anything else on the motion to postpone? Dooley Kiefer.
What is the likely date for the public hearing that is built into your motion to postpone?
Same.
You're not changing that date.
So I didn't actually have that, but it could be, let's see, the date on the was actually November 1. So that could still work if that's legally prescribed, so we don't slow it down at all.
I would like to keep it the same.
Jim?
I'm going to suggest that we have the public hearing in the State Theater because I'm sure that we will have to, hold the number of tickets that people will want to come to that public hearing. So this is one of the worst discussions I've ever heard, without a doubt.
On the motion to postpone, Martha, and then I want to get to a vote on the motion.
I appreciate the motion. I'm going to support it. You're right, Jim, but, you know, we have people who pay attention to some of the oddest things that we do, and you never know who's really going to get into this. So I think this is worth doing.
All right. On the motion to postpone this resolution F until our next meeting, all those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those opposed, 10. Those opposed, 3. That carries, so the resolution is postponed until our next meeting.
Then we can have this discussion again.
We will now take 10. We will now take a 10-minute break.
Can I ask that the document be with the red lines get sent to all our department heads and division heads?
They've seen it all before.
They already seen it.
So take 10 minutes, folks, and we'll come back. Okay, we're back in session. We're going to move now to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you very much. I hope everyone has their OTR sheet with them, and I'd like to run through from number 1 to number 83. I figure we can do 3 minutes for each one. We can go home at 11:30. So my point is this, that tomorrow night there's a budget forum right here at 7 p.m. Thursday night is our first voting meeting, the same time as, you know, our other meetings, 5:30 here. And I hope that people, if they have amendments, they've submitted them to Kevin, and we will proceed, you know, given the number of amendments we have and things like that. The process has not changed considerably at all from last year or the year before that. So that's what I'm hoping. You're ready to do amendments, and please show up at the budget forum tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And that concludes my report. I will take any questions.
Questions for Jim. Thanks, Jim. Let's go to the Jail Study Committee. Rich John is the chair.
We have not met. Our next meeting is October 20th at 5 o'clock after the Public Safety Committee.
Rich, the status of the RFPs there is what?
It's been issued, and this is the time when people are looking to decide if they're going to respond to that or not. So it's on the street.
Questions for Rich? Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee met on September 28th. And one of the main things that we discussed and came out of that committee was the proclamation that we offered this evening to our Native American community members. And so I thank you all for that again. I was prepared to go into a little bit more, but the hour is late, so I'm going to hold my responses for now. I do want to remind you all that we did look at our goals, the committee goals that we set for the year, to see what kind of progress we have been making, just as a reminder of the things we said we're going to do and how we need to continue to move forward. So far, so good on our progress. As a committee, we also talked about, because we realized, and thanks to our Deputy County Administrator, Paula Younger, who is just so efficient and on top of things, man. I want to grow up, I want to be like her. That we're coming to that place where we have to look at our workplace climate survey again. Our policy says that we will do this every 3 years, and so I think 2018 will be the next time that we administer such a survey. And so we began the discussion on what form will it take, perhaps not as what we did the last time, but more or less really looking at what has changed. From the last time we did this, we got all the feedback from employees. We did a very, very extensive process. And to then, as we go forward, we want to build on to hear from employees through the next survey, what has changed, what has not changed, what's new, what's different, et cetera. So we've begun sort of that work and then identifying a small committee to be working towards the whatever the process will be for getting another workplace climate survey out to our workplace in 2018. Those were the main things from our committee. Just a reminder as well that the county is a member of the Diversity Consortium of Tompkins County. As a matter of fact, we were a founding member of the Diversity Consortium. And again, Paul has reminded us that I think we have five seats on the consortium, and currently we don't occupy all those seats. It's a very important role for us, and so we're reaching out to our departments, asking for employees to consider being a part of the consortium. That I am sure invitation is extended to us as legislators as well, since we have a policy and we have a commitment to improving diversity and inclusion, not just within county government, but throughout Tompkins County. So you are encouraged as well. The meetings are every third Friday, 10 a.m. at the Henry St. John's building. There's a conference room in the basement of that building. If you need any further information, Paula has been attending those meetings. You can feel free to give her a call, and she can share more information with you. We also have, through Workforce Diversity and Inclusion, I told you about this last month, and we're reminding, it's our reading and discussion program. The theme, the language of diversity, very fitting, perfect, facilitated by Colonel Woodson, who did it the last time for us, and he's back by popular demand. The registration begins tomorrow, opens tomorrow, I believe. Yes, October 5th. You can go online and check it out. There are four Wednesdays that we ask people to attend, 90 minutes from 3:30 to 5 o'clock. And these are going to be hosted by the Department of Emergency Response. Yay, Department of the DUR for doing this. So October 26th is the first meeting of the group. and then November 2nd, November 9th, and November 16th. If you have not participated and you think that you will have the time to be able to attend all four sessions, you're really encouraged to be there for all four of them. Please do sign up. Please do register. And again, to all employees, we're asking people. I think the cap is 15 people in the discussion group at one time. Our youth services department also is presenting a discussion workshop with Colonel Woodson again, happening tomorrow from 9 to noon at Hotel Ithaca. He is presenting on building more inclusive environments, and so it is open. And they wanted to make sure that you got that information as well. That is the extent of our meeting. We will meet again on October 26th will be our next meeting date, the same day as the start of the reading and discussion program. That's my report.
Thank you. Questions? Dan.
Leslie, I know you said you were just starting the discussions about the climate survey next time, but I just wanted to clarify, were you saying that you were thinking to ask the same questions and see how they changed since last time, or that you would actually ask the question to employees, what do you think has changed?
I think we're moving towards the latter, looking at ways to move towards the latter, but we also were cognizant of the fact that there are probably new employees, others who might not have participated in the survey, the last survey, people who left, and so we might need to have some of the very questions still be asked in that, and then we might be able to compare notes. We might be able to look at the trends from the last time, the trends from this time on the same questions, and see did anything change, as well as just ask those open questions to see how employees are feeling. We've gotten feedback from some employees about things that they're feeling good about, and we've gotten just as much feedback from other employees who are feeling like nothing's new, same old, same old. So we're striving towards trying to find that balance of making sure that everybody has an opportunity to respond if they took the survey before or if they hadn't as well.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thanks for your report, Ms. Lynn.
You're welcome.
Old Library Committee has not met. Let's go to minutes.
Excuse me.
Sure.
Just a quick update on where things stand.
Update.
Yeah.
I think that the developers are still approaching the Ithaca Landmarks Preservation Committee. Is that correct, Joe?
It's my understanding they will be presenting within the next week or two to the Landmarks Committee. Yeah.
Do you know the date and time?
I don't. But I do know that it's an October meeting.
Can somebody send it to us? Find out and send it?
I can try. Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Minutes of September 20th. Anna, seconded by Dave.
No.
Oh, you want to talk about something else? Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, I believe you skipped Transportation Committee.
No, I mentioned that we will be meeting on October 12th.
Did you? Okay.
That's the only, that was my report.
I missed it then.
Okay. Part where you dozed off, didn't you, Dave?
No. I'm sorry, Dave. I somehow lost track of the fact that we had said the Pledge of Allegiance, you know. So
I need a second for the minutes.
We didn't.
Martha, ready to vote on the minutes. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Any unfinished business?
A lot of it.
Now, we're going to go into executive session to discuss two things. One is possible real estate purchase. The second, I said earlier, was litigation. It's really a personnel matter. I should have said that about a particular person. I need a motion and a second. A motion by Peter, seconded by Mike Sigler. All in favor of executive session, please raise your hand. Okay, we'll go into executive session, and we'll shut down.